Yeah, the fascinating thing with hemp is the stigma attached to it, but this renewed sort of sense that there's actually something real here in terms of market diversification opportunities, you know, public appeal even of that product in the marketplace.
That was Russell Redding, the Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture. Very excited to talk to him today on the podcast. Today is our third podcast. As you know, it's all about industrial hemp for a little while. And hey, some exciting news before we get started. We have been approved by iTunes, and you can find us there. So in your iTunes app, your podcast app, click subscribe so you get every latest episode of our podcast. Okay, so today we're going to talk to Russell Redding about industrial hemp. We're going to talk about the stigma. We're going to talk about the supply chain. We're going to talk about what farmers can be and should be doing now to get ready for industrial hemp. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? All right, stick around. Hey, it's Eric again. Just wanted to remind you that there are still sponsorship opportunities available for you here on the podcast. So give us a quick call, 717-733-6397, or send us an email at podcast@lancasterfarming.com, and we will get you involved. Okay, thanks. Back to the show. Hey, welcome back. My name is Eric Herlock. I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper, and today I'm very excited to share with you an interview I conducted with the Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Russell Redding. He's got a very unique perspective on agriculture in the state and a very interesting perspective on industrial hemp. So we're just going to jump right in. Okay, here we go.
And if you could just introduce yourself to us.
Yeah, Russell Redding, Secretary of Agriculture, Pennsylvania.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about industrial hemp. So at what point did you think it was a good idea to bring hemp back to Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it was long before the 2014 Farm Bill made it legal to do so, right? We had talked about this for a couple of years, and there had been sort of interest in our work as a department. For some time, there were sort of rumors of some attempt being made national level to change the course of federal policy around it. That discussion, was in our state, it was in our region through our state departments of agriculture. There were national organizations that we are parts of, either on the feed officials, the regulatory side, department advocacy. So there have been a lot of conversations, but it goes back in the early stages, probably 2009, 2010. Is we really began to take this pretty serious, that it had potential for us.
Okay. What, in your mind, was the attraction to it?
I think there were a couple of levels. One, when you have towns and townships that carry the name Hempfield in Pennsylvania's case, Lancaster, there are others, you know that it's real. It's not something just somebody passed through the neighborhood. It was actually rooted here and long history. So intrigued by what that looked like and the opportunities with it. Have a lot of interest, standing interest for me personally in the opportunities, not just from the market side, but potentially the in environmental remediation. And I think that's one of the opportunities for us. If we talk about the bay, we talk about nitrogen, we talk about phosphorus. What are the plants that can do that most effectively? I think, hemp is in that category. Fast growing, so you have some opportunities in cover crop for high erosion soils. So I think there's a really strong environmental stewardship component to this.
Did you have any reservations about it? I mean, what do you think about the stigma with marijuana?
That is a manufactured stigma. And it's unfortunate that, 1937, this was in the same cannabis family, and family used very loosely, right? Because there are really important, genetic distinctions and science distinctions. But unfortunately, it got categorized as such, carried the class 1 label, became a prohibition. That's a manufactured stigma. but it was well propagated that, you know, it was in this marijuana family, and therefore, you know, you do certain things with that class of plant, and there's certain things you don't do. So that's part of our challenge, but we're going to have to sort of unravel that. It wasn't a reservation on the, say, at the agriculture level. It's been fascinating to watch the stigma attached to it when you talk in law enforcement, right? Because they don't make a distinction in the genetics. They haven't. And part of what we have to do is sort of unravel that and parse out what that the cannabis family is. But we also see it by extension of the law enforcement's concerns at our local governments. Right? There are township officials and others who have really been cautious about that industrial hemp plant because of what it looks like, and concerns, I think, about what the public perceptions will be if it appears in the township, right? And we've seen that at some recent meetings. So it's going to take some work to unravel it.
So how do you sort of bridge those reservations, you know, with conservative farmers? And, you know, do you think that's going to be an issue, or do you think farmers will look at it just as sort of a dollars and cents kind of equation?
Well, I think it's, the last 2 years have been telling. I've been in meetings with, you know, the Amish community, and they can't wait to grow it. Right, so I think there's a sensitivity there. There's familiarity with it. Certainly, the family and community were, you know, growers of industrial hemp for many years, and when it went away, they had to step out of it. And I think it's been interesting in that community, where I think there's a greater awareness of what the plant was historically and what its potential is today. There are some in the English community that are more sensitive to the perceptions of the plant, and maybe take a little more convincing to grow it. But I don't think that's as much of an issue in year two for Pennsylvania as it was in year one. Just by conversation, we now have the major farm organizations sort of on board with it. That tells me that there's a growing awareness of the opportunity, but also a comfort level with the plant and potential.
Are you confident that it'll pass through the Farm Bill this year?
I'm confident only because of the prime sponsor.
Industrial hemp.
Senator McConnell. If he was not in that conversation, lead on it even, I think there's still some concern at the national level about the stigma attached to it, which is unfortunate.
Once this becomes legal and farmers can grow it and the restrictions are removed, how do we make sure that farmers don't get the short end of the stick?
That is A on the list, and I've been reminded of that a couple of times, even from the farmers, right? Because there's the concern that we've got to be sort of farmer-centric in how we build out the program and make sure that the farmer is a primary beneficiary of this, right? And it's pretty rare, because we've had experiences. Farmers are growing corn and soybeans and wheat and all these other grains and such. This is one where, from the very beginning, you actually can set a model for the control of it, and not proprietary, but at least control in that supply chain to determine who grows it, what value is added, what market channels are available to you. So I think we have a high level of responsibility to help ensure that structure is protected at the outset, right? We'll also say quickly, though, that it's incumbent on the farmers to have some organizational structure that facilitates that, and that's either by cooperative or by whatever agreement they want to structure. They have to sort of take some responsibility for it. And there's some discussions occurring about how we organize that at the state, how you facilitate that. This whole supply chain discussion, I think, is among other issues, one of the most important. And what does that supply chain look like? Who contributes to it? Who benefits from it? Is something we should really pay close attention to and help facilitate that the right people are in that conversation. because it's part of this infrastructure discussion around industrial hemp that I think is one of the most important, right? Infrastructure means intellectual capacity, right? So what does extension and research look like relative to that infrastructure? You know, what does the checks and balances of supply chain look like in terms of on-farm storage? And you know, I think they're all part of the conversation about, you know, the farm community's opportunity and role with that, right? So that's been part of what we've been encouraging. Likewise, folks have encouraged us to sort of facilitate some of those conversations, try to have a steering committee. So we're not assuming that certain conversations are going to occur, or that somebody within the ag community is actually going to take the leadership to convene all of that. But we very intentionally sort of structure it. Not control it, but try to structure it. So we're in those conversations and have sort of in our own mind have the schematic that at the very core has been sort of farmer. And then around it, I've got a number of sort of issues from research to workforce to equipment to supply chain, you know, are all part of those considerations. So I think that is the central question. We'll figure out the science of it. We'll figure out product uses of it. But the question is whether it's actually going to be something where the real economic value is harnessed at the farm level. I think that's something we need to pay particular attention to.
So what should farmers be doing now to sort of prepare for this?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things I would say. One, for farmers with an interest in whether they're a permit holder today or just see long-term, assume for a moment the farm bill were successful and we get a green light, is that, you know, the farm community ought to be talking about, well, okay, if I have that opportunity, what do I need to... what do I personally need to be successful there, right? Does that look like on-farm storage opportunities? Who do I look to in terms of advice and counsel and crop consultants? I mean, what is their knowledge level? What access do I have in terms of, you know, both seed quality and the integrity of that seed? What do I have for both, you know, the agronomic question of fertilization and soil testing and, you know, insect control? There are pieces that the farmer shouldn't assume that somebody else is actually figuring out, right? So pull their interests together, and we have really good models where we have, you know, crop consulting groups that have formed around in, you know, certain regions of interest. So that would be number one, is, you know, start to organize a little bit. Two, there are examples around the world, right? If you look into Canada, to our neighbor, they've got some very structured programs and supply chain pieces. So that would be a second. Third would be, we have the standing issue of equipment to plant and harvest. And one thing I've learned with the ag community is they're great entrepreneurs. They'll figure out, they'll modify, they'll make it happen. But that was a lesson out of 2017 that needs a lot of work. We're lucky to have some of the, you know, manufacturers right here in Pennsylvania. We should be talking to them about what that looks like. Right.
Have you talked to them at all about this?
We have. We had a couple of conversations with CNH, Case New Holland, and they were quick to respond that yes, it's of interest, and it's within the company, and there's a lot of knowledge in Canada, and their work up there, and sales and equipment and service. Yeah, so that would be one that I would say. The other piece around... The farmer interest, and I think is important, is the control of the genetic seed stock. And I think it's one area, again, where you can reset a conversation that in other crops has evolved that did not include the farmer's interest in it necessarily, right? And I look at this as one of those where, you know, Pennsylvania, has an opportunity to sort of have some Pennsylvania preferred and protected seed stock. Two is that should really be held by, as closely as possible, the farm or the farmer's interest and not some corporate interest. I really worry about that, right? Because in that genetic ownership, you have a chance to sort of do the very specific marketing marketing of certain types of products, the modification of that plant for certain reasons. And I would be disappointed if that completely evolves and doesn't include the farmer's interest.
Okay, there you have it from Secretary Redding. We're going to end it there for today, but we're going to listen to more of this interview in a future podcast. So I hope to see you next time. Again, my name is Eric Herlock, and if you have any questions about what you're hearing on the podcast, or you have questions about industrial hemp that you want me to find answers for, send me an email. You can reach me at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. And I do hope to hear from you. And until next time, we'll see you in the newspaper.